pro. Hello, and welcome back to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
You're not?
No, I'm not, but he is my favorite conservative.
Aw, thank you.
You're welcome. So, season three, our theme is March to the Election, so we're always going to start with the polls. And let's take a quick look at the polls and see how they're trending. In the Real Clear Politics national average, Trump versus Biden, last week, Trump was up 0.3. This week, Trump is up 1.5. So again, we take these polls with a grain of salt, but that's a bump for Trump.
Yeah, that's a significant increase for sure. But I think everybody knows this is, believe it or not, not a national election. It's only going to be a few states that are going to decide. It is. It's very sad.
All right. Tell us about the battleground states.
Battleground states. All right. We'll look at last week and then this week. And let's start in Pennsylvania, where last week Biden was up 0.4. That has flipped. Trump is now up 0.1.
No.
Or excuse me, 1 point.
One point.
A full point. He's up one. Yes.
So that's significant because it's a flip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So in North Carolina, Trump was up 4.8. He is now up 5.4. So he's increased that.
That's not surprising. I think North Carolina is going to go completely red.
Yeah. And surprisingly, a lot of people had questions about it. But yeah, it seems safely in his camp as of now.
Unfortunately, there have been some changes, though.
There have been. Let's go down to Georgia,
okay,
where Trump was up 4. He is now up, but only 3.8.
So he has dropped.
Dropped a little bit.
He's still up, but
For sure. Let's go to the Midwest with Michigan. Michigan and Wisconsin, very, very important.
I
think that's kind of where everything's going to happen this year. In Michigan, Trump was up 3 last week. He is now up 1.2.
Okay. So I think that's a significant drop for him.
He needs
Michigan to win.
It is. In Wisconsin, Trump was last week was up 2. He is now up 1.8, which is pretty close to seven.
Yeah, within the margin of error for sure.
But let's go out west with the two states out there. Let's start with Nevada, where last week Trump was up 4.8. He is now up 4.5. Again,
but that's a drop,
kind of a wash, a little bit of a drop, but not a big
deal. So he lost a little traction in Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada.
Right. And in Arizona, he is up 5 last week. He continues to maintain that same up 5.
So I think Arizona will turn red again. I think it will.
It is. There's always a wild card there with the governor, Katie Hobbs.
She and
Carrie Lake last time got into it, and she used to be the Secretary of State and ran the election and her election at the same time. So
That was ever legal, but anyway, we digress. So those are some very interesting numbers. Let's get to our main topic. It has been a crazy week.
Oh yes, it has. It has. You know, we had Trump in court. We had Biden out campaigning.
Okay, I don't call what Biden did campaigning, just FYI, but continue.
Okay, he showed up at some places.
He showed up.
Yes, yes. So we had Biden out campaigning. We had Trump out campaigning when he's not in court.
And he really was campaigning.
Oh, yeah.
Hard, yeah.
He's campaigning after court, going around in New York City. Yeah, yeah. It's impressive, the receptions that he's getting. Around the colleges, they are being overtaken by protesters.
Yep.
And protesters are being overtaken by police. So it's like, whoo, we got a lot going on there.
Well, there never seems to be a shortage of crazy over-the-top news. However, this election is such an important moment for our country. And as we discussed last week when we launched season three, we were really going to focus on a topic every single week that we feel will affect the election. So, Edward, what are we talking about today?
Well, we are going to discuss election insecurity and interference.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, I mean, our republic, and it is a republic, it is dependent on free and fair elections. And voter fraud is nothing new. It really isn't. It's been going on for a long, long time, as long as we've been a country.
Yeah.
But what is new is that one party in our system is openly pushing to make elections less secure.
Right. And I think we need to be clear. We don't want anyone to engage in voter fraud on either side, either party. Okay. It doesn't matter. No one should be doing it.
Yeah. Amen. If somebody breaks the law by trying to vote illegally or a scheme to vote illegally, I do not care what party you represent. You go to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only way you're going to stop this. But the Democrats, however, I've got a little punch list here of what the Democrats want that they somehow think is going to make the elections even better. Mm-hmm. No voter ID.
We're going to dive into these topics.
Into each one of them individually.
Stay with us.
Universal mail-in voting. Oh, God. No signature verification. No citizenship verification. No cleanup of the voter rolls. They want third party, meaning privately funded drop boxes. Mm-hmm. And they want ballot harvesting.
Oh, boy.
I think we need to adhere to what Jimmy Carter and James Baker recommended. And I think you have something on that, right?
Yeah. So this is from the Carter Center. In 2005, former President Jimmy Carter and former U.S. Secretary of State James A. Baker III, they co-chair the Commission on Federal Election Reform, which produced a report on the U.S. electoral process and recommendations on maximizing ballot access and election integrity.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, they came up with 87 recommendations covering a range of issues, including voter registration, voter ID, nonpartisan election administration,
Amen.
And the need for additional research on voting by mail.
And 19 years later, many of these recommendations are still relevant. They really are. So while the COVID-19 pandemic and the record number of voters who cast absentee or mail-in ballots raise concerns about the security of the 2020 absentee process, the Carter-Baker report warned, and this was in 2005, guys, absentee ballots remain the largest source of potential voter fraud.
Right. But that quote there, now that's from an update that they did just recently.
The Carter Center did. Okay.
Yes. Yes. That's only about a year ago. So they're saying what we thought was a possible problem
it's
19
huge.
Years ago is still big.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And this, the same thing, the Carter Baker report was also very skeptical towards voting by mail. So they said, well, while vote by mail appears to increase turnout at federal elections, there's no evidence that it significantly expands participation in federal elections. So I think that's a little.
I agree. I've read that line a few times.
I know. It kind of says like, I'm like, okay, wait. Yes. While vote by mail appears to increase turnout, it doesn't expand participation. It seems like that they're negating themselves.
I agree with that. All right. Would love for them to clarify.
Yes, please. Yes. Hello, please clarify. But they also said it raises concerns about privacy as citizens voting at home may come under pressure to vote for certain candidates and increases the risk of fraud. I totally agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And it also noted that in Oregon, Oregon appears to have avoided significant fraud with measures like signature verification. Vote by mail is, however, likely to increase the risk of fraud and of contested elections in other states where the population is more mobile, where there is some history of troubled elections, or where the safeguards of ballot integrity are weaker. And so let's look at some of the concerns that we talked about earlier.
Yes. And we do see, by the way, some of you watching live and many of you watching live. And depending on the platform, you can comment in real time. So please, if you feel comfortable, share your comments or questions, and we will do our best to address them in real time. So the first one, and I'm a little passionate about this one, no voter ID. Okay, so what's really fascinating about this, only the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania, and us.
In some states,
yeah. Right? But only those countries don't require voter ID.
Yes. And we have everywhere else in the world.
Yes.
That has free elections require some sort of voter ID.
Yes. Correct? More than half the countries in the world have that's a different one. Okay. I'm going to get to that one in just a second. So what I think is interesting about those countries is they are Western countries. They are
all English speaking.
They're all English speaking countries. And just because they do it that way doesn't mean we need to do it that way. The other thing that's interesting is more than half the countries of the world have mandatory voter registration.
Which is
really unusual because we don't have that.
No, a lot of people, a lot of countries have mandatory military service too.
Yes, that's true. Yes. And we have a link to a map that we're going to put in the show notes. This map is phenomenal. So if you're listening to the podcast, check out the show notes. And here's what's also interesting is, and a lot of people have been talking about this lately, why do the Democrats think minorities are incapable of obtaining ID?
I don't know. That's always their argument in about no voter ID is that it's going to disenfranchise some people. How do you possibly survive in today's world without an ID? Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. There are no burdens. Every state in the nation will provide you with a voter ID free of charge if you so need it.
Yeah.
And this is a George Bushism here, the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Yes,
where
it is. Yeah. It's
to me, it's not soft bigotry. This is flat out racism where they say you're too stupid to get an ID.
And I want to throw something here. It's sort of related, but it is kind of interesting because it gets to that point of ID. As Edward said, we're not talking about you have to have a passport or even a driver's license. Every state will give you an ID.
Yeah.
We were at UPS this weekend. It was so fascinating. This guy came in and he's traveling to the UK. Mm-hmm. This is kind of interesting. And they require there, now, mind you, they don't require voter ID in the UK, but they require there he needed an additional passport photo to ride their public transportation. Yeah. His passport wasn't good enough to ride their public transportation. He needed an additional ID. I was like, what? It was crazy. So, and maybe that was just London, not the whole country, because he was going to London. But it just goes to show you that that it's not that difficult.
No.
And he was a minority.
He was indeed. Yeah.
He was. All right. True. Give us the next one, Edward.
Well, let's look at universal mail-in voting. So many countries around the world have mail-in voting, but they also require additional verification on their ballots. Many, many countries around the world, on your mail-in ballot, you have to actually list and write down your government ID number on there, and you do have to sign it. So I guess my question is, why do Democrats want mail-in voting with no verification whatsoever?
Well, and I know that you have some personal experience with this. So would you share your year of working for the census?
Yeah, in 2020, I was actually a supervisor at the census here in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yes.
And I had a group of people that I was supervising out in the field. And you got to remember, all of this information that the government uses comes from the census.
Right, which is done every decade.
I would like to say it was really stringent in terms of verifying addresses and whatnot, but that would not be true. We got the talking points, the strategy when we went out there was any person that had a possible living mode, you would have to count. It could be a tent underneath the freeway. You would list that as someone being an inhabitant, which would then qualify possible votes or ballots to go out. You would hang all the door hangers and everything else on houses that were clearly uninhabitable, like fallen down, everything else. And yet they still got listed in the census as possible abodes, and that's where these ballots are going out to.
Right.
And it's just ripe for voter fraud. It really is.
Well, tell us what the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, what he said.
Yeah, Ken Paxton, he actually got into a little bit. He put out a nice letter and it says, this is how the fraud is perpetrated. He says, once mail ballots go out, harvesters show up at a voter's door and offer voting assistance. They often appear friendly and helpful. Successful vote harvesters leave with a voter signature and a ballot that is blank, that or that is correctly voted, or can be modified later. Or the harvester can simply discard the ballot if the voter chose the wrong candidate. Done effectively, the process is largely invisible to the voter, who is led to believe their ballot was cast according to their wishes. And we have seen that in this, in the last election in 2020, you see where there were harvesters, air quotes, at nursing homes. Yes. And coaching these people on who to vote for and then gathering up all these ballots. And it is absolutely insecure.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, I mean, you know, voters, they often, they cast their mail ballots well ahead of the general election. Yeah. And of the actual election.
And we really
day.
Saw that in 2020 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, early voting causes voters to miss significant campaign issues, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that have popped up at the last minute.
Yeah. So one of the things I just want to address on this point is, some people blame James Comey for revealing more about Clinton's emails 9 days before the 2020 election.
Right.
Do you know how many people had already voted in, because of this mail-in process? And I'm going to call out my dad. I totally disagree with my dad here. What James Comey did not change the election. It did not. The enthusiasm, whether fortunately or unfortunately, was already there for Trump, but also so many people mailed in their ballots early because of COVID and did not want to go in person and didn't need to and were required to. So that did not have an impact on the election.
Well, I think with the Democrats, they loved the COVID, you know, mail-in ballot.
They did.
Thing because it gave them an excuse. And now they want to continue that because they say it's easier for people.
Yes. So another thing about voter fraud, no signature verification. Both the Obama and Biden Justice Departments have sued states that want to verify signatures. And we have to ask why.
Why
are they doing this?
Correct.
So we're going to take a look at Michigan. This is pretty fascinating. Michigan law requires voters who wish to cast their vote by mail to sign applications for an absentee ballot. And as someone who has voted by mail like years ago, I remember doing something similar. Local officials then verify the voter's identity by comparing these signatures against the voter's signature on file before approving the request for an absentee ballot. So listen to all these steps here.
That's good so
yes,
far.
Once a Michigan voter casts an absentee ballot, local officials must again verify the voter's signature on the return envelope of the ballot using the same signature matching process. And I remember, you know, you sign the back of the ballot. However,
there's more.
The Michigan Secretary of State's recent instructions, and as Edward alluded to earlier, or you didn't allude, you said, we feel like Michigan is going to be probably the most pivotal state.
Yeah.
And now the Secretary of State's instructions were sent to the local election officials, allow them to bypass their own verification system by applying, and this is a quote here, presumption of validity to the signatures on absentee ballot applications and ballot return envelopes. So basically, Michigan has a great system set up, and now the Secretary of State's like, fuck that, we're not doing that. Like, you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what you saw in the 2020 election, especially in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And they had the courts, you know, the one party, the Democrats, would go and petition a very favorable judge just a few weeks before the election, and they would get a ruling from a favorable judge about, you know, dates and times that ballots don't have to be dated any longer or anything accepted after the actual date, the actual election date could still be accepted. And there was no time to challenge it in other courts. And so they were changing the law by court versus the only way they can do that is through the legislature. And this is what happens where they try to just jam the system at the last minute. And it worked. It worked like a champ.
All right. Yeah. Give us the next one, Edward.
Well, how about no citizenship verification? You should be a citizen, right?
Yes.
One would think.
We feel that way. You should be a citizen to vote in this country.
But,
because that's the case in almost every other country.
I believe in every country, except so, well, what I'm seeing is too many states, they are issuing IDs to non-citizens or illegal aliens or immigrants who will try to use them to vote. Many states are starting what I call mission creep, and that is letting citizens vote in local elections to start with. Non-citizens, letting them, you know, see, we're seeing it in San Francisco. I think in Maine, they're also doing it, where they're letting non-citizens now vote in their elections, in the local elections, which will then they're going to want to mission creep that up to state elections.
Without using the word mission creep, what are you really saying? Forget the jargon.
A mission creep is when you slowly implement progress to reach the final mission goal.
See, just say that. You don't need to say mission creep.
But it's very succinct.
Oh, God. Okay. Thank you. But it's jargon.
Yeah. And I mean, even California, you know, they issue government IDs to illegal immigrants, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And they've done that for a very long time. I think it was Newsom who came out. I know we talked about this in a previous episode and said that they were doing it. They had been doing it for a decade before they made it legal to do it. Like it wasn't, they had been doing it for a long time as someone who lived in California for over two decades.
Yeah. And there have been numerous occasions where somebody was charged with voter fraud and illegal. And I think they were honestly, they thought if they got that ID, they were allowed to vote.
Yeah. There's another one, Edward.
Well, no cleanup of the voter rolls.
Yeah. So, there's so many thoughts on this, but give us the kind of breakdown here.
Well, I mean, voter registration rolls can be highly inaccurate.
Yes, because people die.
Yes.
And move.
Yes. In fact, an example, in January of 2020, the state of California.
Really? We're back to California.
We are indeed. Okay. And the county of Los Angeles agreed to remove up to 1.5 million inactive names from voter registration lists to settle a lawsuit brought on by Judicial Watch. So sending ballots to people who died or moved away lends itself to fraud.
100%.
There is no doubt about that. And again, both the Biden and the former Obama Justice Departments have sued states trying to clean up their voter rolls. They went after Ohio tremendously. Fortunately, they lost that case and Ohio was able to start purging.
Good.
But what in God's name would you, why wouldn't you want to do this?
Right. And well, because they want to commit fraud.
Well, I think the left's answer to that is, well, what if you accidentally remove somebody? Well, okay.
If they care enough, they'll re-register.
Yeah, could it happen? Yes, they can re-register. They can say, I'm not dead. I didn't move. But for one person or just a few people that would have to go through that inconvenience, getting hundreds of thousands of people who are dead or moved off the voter rolls is worth it.
Yeah. And this is an analogy. Bear with me. As someone who runs a business, we are always cleaning up our databases, right? Our email marketing database, because there are laws in place about that. You can't just email anyone as a business just because you want to. People have to opt in to receive communications from you. We make it a practice to clean up what's called our CRM, which is content relationship management. I think that's what that stands for. But the bottom line is all of the constituents in our world, we make it a goal to clean up that database because we want a clean database. We want people who want to hear from us and want to be part of our world. And to me, purging the voter rolls is something that should be done annually.
Oh, absolutely. And the solid red states have been doing it now and are really cleaned up. Florida, Texas, et cetera.
All right. Next one. This is one of my pet peeves. Third party, and that means privately funded drop boxes. And not like Dropbox, the software, if you use that. No, actual physical drop boxes. Right. So Mark Zuckerberg spent nearly $400 million in 2020 to help, quote, get out the vote, I'm using air quotes if you're listening to the podcast. 94% of this money was spent in Biden won districts.
Let me jump in here. And a little context to that is the reason Zuckerberg spent $400 million in 2020 is because in 2016, when Trump won, the media and a lot of leftists went after Zuckerberg saying, you didn't do enough. You didn't censor enough.
Okay.
And this was his way to say, my bad, let me make it up to you.
So the money he spent largely was on these drop boxes, right?
Ads, but he also spent money in actual election offices.
Okay. Let's get back to the drop boxes though. So these boxes where you can drop in ballots are unsecured.
Yep.
There's no video surveillance. They are absolutely ripe for ballot stuffing. And many states have now outlawed these boxes.
No, well, they're the Zucker bucks, the actual money.
That, oh, okay.
Yeah. The private funding of public election integrity is no longer legal.
Okay. So that means the boxes would not be legal.
Correct. And most of these boxes were placed in Democrat districts.
Well, you would feel the vast majority.
But if you're going to do it, you want to do it spread out evenly.
So,
right.
So, and here's the thing, as someone who leans more definitely independent, but leans a little more libertarian, there are a lot of things that libertarians think the government should not do that government does. Voter registration and regulation is one of the few things government should do.
Yeah.
And it should not be outsourced privately. And I even think John Stossel would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you can parse it a little bit when you talk about like the voting machines and whatnot, because those are, you know, done by private companies.
I'm talking about these boxes, this is something like, do we want government going to space when Elon Musk can do it better? No, let Elon Musk do it. Great. But when it comes to these boxes, they should not be privately funded.
I completely by anybody. Agree. And any boxes that are out there that are government boxes should be fully monitored. Video surveillance.
Absolutely.
There have been numerous, in fact, recently, of people, they're actually getting video from this last election. There's been local elections around the states where people are stuffing these things. You know, a woman coming back 3 or 4 times during the middle of the night. And
so some of them have video surveillance, is what you're saying.
Some do. Yeah.
Some do.
Yeah.
Most don't. Yeah. All right. This leads directly into the last point we have here.
It's kind of a pet peeve for me, but unfortunately is becoming legal around the country. Ballot harvesting.
Yes.
Yes. And a big shout out to our state here. Alabama is the only state where the voter is the only person who can return their ballot.
Alabama. Now, but tell us what some of the other states
couple
are doing.
A couple of stats. 24 states and Washington, D.C. permitted someone chosen by the voter to return mail ballots on their behalf in most cases.
Wait, so to return their mail-in ballots? Is that
Yes. So in 13 states specified who may return the ballots, such as a household member or a caregiver in most cases. Now, 12 states did not specify whether someone may return another's ballot. So it's kind of wide open there.
Okay.
To me, that's ripe for fraud. And the key to a ballot is the chain of custody. You must know where the ballot is and how it got to the voter and how it got back to the election office. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you want to comment on that, but
no.
Yeah. You know, if you saw this, and we touched on it earlier, of these ballot harvesters, and unfortunately, there's so many states that now allow it that both sides are having to play the game. And now it's a ground game of getting, you know, your best people out there.
And it shouldn't be allowed on any side. We need to say
it shouldn't be. You know, to me, we've been told that voting, you know, is our highest calling in our society, right? It's a sacred right.
Even though we don't mandate it, but yes.
Right. It's a sacred right, a responsibility. First off, if you don't pay attention, please don't vote.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've always said that. Yeah.
But I feel the Democrats are doing everything in their power to undermine it. I call bullshit on Democrats. End of rant? Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So... so that was our voter insecurity and election fraud topic as we march toward the election. We do have a new segment.
We do.
Believe it or not, as most of you know, we always have a section or a little, called This Week in Woke. And then occasionally we have This Week in WTF or What the Fuck. But Edward was sharing so many positive stories with me this week, and I thought we got to share some positive stuff.
I don't know what got into me. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, you were looking for bad stuff, and you were finding some good stuff.
That's crazy.
So we have a new section's not the word I'm looking for. What's the word? Segment.
Segment.
There we go. God, so sorry for all those watching live. So we have a new segment called This Week in Wins.
Wins. What do you mean by wins?
By wins, I mean like positive.
Positive. Okay.
Good stuff. Wins. Okay. And I'm sticking with the W's. Just go with it.
Okay.
All right. So this is from our good friend, Fuzzy Chimp. Love it. At twitchy.com. We're going to tag you.
Go Fuzzy.
All right. So this is the way. Ben Sass lays down the law to protesters at the University of Florida. So this is fascinating. The proper way to handle legal protest at universities has been clear from the beginning. And to me, this is like, duh. Enforce the law. So this is what he says. The article said, no student has been denied the opportunity to express their First Amendment rights, even if it is to do something as stupid as being willing tools for Hamas. What they don't have the right to do is break the law. The left believes lawbreaking is justified when they deem their cause worthy enough. Ben Sass, he says no.
Nope.
If you don't know who Ben Sass is, he's a former senator from Nebraska, and he's the current University of Florida president. And he framed it perfectly. So we are going to quote him exactly here. At the University of Florida, we have repeatedly, patiently explained two things to protesters. We will always defend your rights to free speech and free assembly. But if you cross the line on clearly prohibited activities, you will be thrown off campus and suspended. In Gainesville, that means a 3-year prohibition. Ooh. From campus. That's serious. We said it, we meant it, and we enforced it. We wish we didn't have to, but the students weighed the cost, made their decisions, and will own the consequences as adults. We're a university, this is a great line, I'm gonna say this again. We're a university, not a daycare. We don't coddle emotions. We wrestle with ideas. And I couldn't agree more, because I was living on campus during the LA riots in the early 90s.
Where were you? USC?
At USC, okay. University of Southern California. I was not one of the University of Spoiled Children. And I was there, and I won't go into all the details, but law was enforced. National Guard was there. Students were kept safe. And with all the protests around the country, this is the way to do it. Absolutely. You have a right to free speech, and you have the right to assemble. That's in our Bill of Rights. You want to be a Hamas supporter, you can shout it from the rooftops, but you cannot start to incite violence. You can't stop students, like they were happening at UCLA, from attending classes. People stopping Jewish students, blocking their path to go to school. Guess what? That is against the law, and you can't do it.
Amen. One other thing I love that they did at the University of Florida. Now, by the way, I am from the state of Florida, spent most of my life there, and not a big UF fan.
He's
however,
not.
Yeah, for me to say this, the big kudos out to them is when the students first started, you know, trying to take over the university by pitching all their tents out on the lawns, the University of Florida at 3 o'clock in the morning decided, we probably need to water the grass. Turned on the sprinklers, and you watched them run like cockroaches. So good to them. Good to UF. You know.
So I forget who it is, Columbia University's president. Just look at what Ben Sass did. It's not that hard, guys.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It's not that hard.
That's the problem, is you have to have leadership, and you have to be willing to enforce. I mean, you know, they're going to suspend them for 3 years.
Yeah.
That's a serious punishment, you know, for sure.
So. Yeah.
They'll all be graduating at 35, maybe, right?
All right, so back to our regular segment.
Okay.
And what I love about the segment, if you're new to our show, is I usually don't know what Edward's going to come up with, because this is his segment, and so I just get so tickled by it. So it's called This Week in Woke.
This Week in Woke, from our good friends at thecollegefix.com.
They always have good stuff.
Great content there. Yeah, for sure. Headline, UCLA study. Gay couples at greater risk from climate change. Let me read that again. Gay couples at greater risk from climate change.
It's just that, I feel like that headline was created for clickbait because it's just so silly.
Let's go to the article, shall we?
Yes, go to the article, please.
A new study out of UCLA says same-sex couples are at greater risk of exposure to the adverse effects of climate change than straight couples. These effects include wildfires, floods, smoke-filled skies, and drought, according to a report from KQED. Now, let's stop right there. So, a wildfire or drought affects somebody who is gay more.
Keep going with the article. All right. Keep going.
Same-sex couples disproportionately live in coastal regions and cities which are more vulnerable to such disasters. They're also more likely to live in areas with poor infrastructure, worse-built environments. Says who? Okay, so
keep going.
Anyway, Washington, D.C., which rates high for climate risks such as heat waves, floods, and dangerously strong winds, because we know how strong those D.C. winds are blowing, right? Talk to Hawaii, right? Has the greatest proportion of gay couples in the U.S. Here's where we get into it. San Francisco ranks second and also faces a high climate change risk. According to KQED, again, the city's leather and LGBTQ cultural district flooded 22 years ago, swamping the entire area. Let me repeat that. 22 years ago, the closest supermarket, the Rainbow Grocery, also got flooded. But to finish this up, Ari Shaw, who is the Director of International Programs at UCLA School of Law's Williams Institute, who specializes in, wait for this, international human rights, LGBTI politics. What's the I? I don't
know. Intersex? I don't know. Okay.
And U.S. foreign policy noted that the study cuts against the narratives that LGBT individuals have access to resources that they need. Now, the way this study was put together, from the census again, right? And they looked at people living together, same-sex people living together.
Okay.
They didn't delineate whether you were homosexual, lesbian, anything like that.
Or roommates.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
So this entire study is assuming that people that are of the same sex living together are
romantically involved.
Romantically involved. Correct.
That right is there, so disingenuous.
Correct. Absolutely. And
oh my
and
God.
How you can say, you know, couples living in Washington, D.C. and
oh my God, I had roommates forever.
Correct. Well, you're obviously a lesbian, and thanks for letting me know. But I'm a little late in the process here, but you know, where do you come up with this garbage? I mean, I think the guy himself, you know, he specializes in international human rights, LGBTI politics, and foreign relations. It's like you're just trying to make work for yourself, right?
That can be true. You know, it's important that you get published. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a nonsense study. Don't get me started on, you know, the climate change fraud that's out there. But this, where one group is more affected without having any numbers on your side of actually knowing how many people, just assuming that everybody that lives together of the same sex is having sex with each other. So
that was the part that I did not know was coming.
Yeah.
It was a surprise. Yes. We do have a devoted listener. I won't call him out. He knows who he is, but he is part of this community. Although I know he threw away his LGBT whatever card a long time ago. That's what he told me anyway, but would love to know your thoughts. Yes. On this, this gay couples at greater risk from climate change. So
yes. Well, remember in San Francisco, 22 years ago, they had a flood. Like, you know what? I can point around the entire country for the last 22 years, you know,
yeah, there are a lot of floods,
Mississippi, yeah. Tennessee, you name it. Yes. Right. I mean, come on. Good Lord.
Anything else on that?
No.
All right.
Done.
All right, we do see you watching. Thank you so much for joining us. If you joined us live today, please be sure to follow us on all social media platforms. And we are live most Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If we are not going to be live, we will let you know. Otherwise, you can catch us right here. And we stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. If you're listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, Monday morning, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast available wherever you're listening right now. We are putting our locals community together. I swear we are. Because we do see so many people watching and not commenting. And I understand, we understand if you don't want your comments in to be public, like we get it. So we're going to put that together for you. And please be sure to learn more and follow us and all the socials and everything. MyFavoriteConservative.show. It's MyFavoriteConservative.show.
All right.
Anything else?
No. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us on Sunday.